Your talk show is brought to you by E&D Waterworks in Janesville. If water runs to it or through it, they do it. Your community. Your opinions. Your forum. This is your talk show on WCLO. Opinions expressed on your talk show are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of WCLO or Big Radio staff, management, or sponsors. The open phone and text line number is 608-752-4000. Now, here's the host of your talk show, Tim Bremmel.
Welcome back to the program. Francesca Hong in a minute. We've tried to touch base with the campaigns, whether or not they get back to us as far as offering us an opportunity to speak with the candidates is quite another issue. But we're working through that. We'll get to as many of them as we can. As I said earlier, there is apparently a televised debate tonight between the five candidates for the Democratic side of the ticket. They will be on everyone's ballot. There has been a lot of talk about these candidates, even from within the Democratic Party. So we'll get you as much info as we can. We talked with, hang on a second, I got to get the right notes up here. We've talked with a couple of folks in the Democratic side in the first congressional district. We have worked for the Democratic side of the governor's race, and we ultimately have both of the Republican candidates on. We talked with Andy Mansky, and I do have a interview set up with Tom Tiffany, which we'll bring you once that's all recorded. But we have on the Democratic side of the ticket for the governor's race, Francesca Hong, who so far is the only person to confirm, and we'll have her momentarily here. Joel Brennan is another name. Kelda Royce, who is a state senator. Mandela Barnes, who is the former lieutenant governor. And David Crowley, who was in and dropped out and then got back in, and who is not on the list anymore, Sarah Rodriguez, who ended her campaign like 2 weeks ago now. So there's five, and they will have different viewpoints, and trust me, we'll talk about this more, I'm sure, in generalities at some point. I want to let Francesca Hong speak for herself to some of the things that are out there. But if you're following politics, you know a lot of the talking points surrounding some of the Democratic candidates, good, bad, or otherwise, and you're going to hear from them in what I believe is a candid discussion, and you make up your own mind as to whether that's the one for you. So let me thank her in advance, and we'll bring you my pre-recorded discussion with Francesca Hong. Our next guest is Francesca Hong. She is a state representative in the state assembly, and she would like to be your next governor. Good morning, and thank you for joining us, Representative Hong.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
All right. You are a candidate that is getting a lot of press. I don't know if you want it all, but you've been getting a fair amount of press because of what people seem to want to do is associate you with a particular creed that's out there right now. And I'll ask you about that in a bit. But I would like to get to know you a little bit on a personal level, just to know who Francesca Hong is, where you're from, all the things that make you you and make you want to serve in Wisconsin's highest office.
Well, I am a very proud daughter of Korean immigrants. My folks came here in the late 80s to pursue public education. So public education is deeply personal to me. I'm born and raised in Madison. I'm a single mom to my wonderful son, George, and I'm a service industry worker. I worked my way up from dishwasher and line cook to executive chef, and then opened my own restaurant in 2016. I'm still a bartender and proud to be a service industry worker and the only wage worker of candidates in this race. In 2020, I was elected to the state legislature as the first Asian American to serve in the legislature. And since my time there, I fought for policies that serve working class people first. Healthy school meals for all to help our families, lower costs with groceries, and to make sure our kids are fed, paid leave for all, because no one should have to choose between losing hours at work and taking care of an aging parent or a loved one or a new baby, fully funding our public schools, taxing the billionaires, ending corporate loopholes and subsidies that hurt our small businesses, and raising wages for all workers.
That's a big list. You have a lot of ambitions, and those will obviously take a lot of cooperation from the legislature in order to get some of those things across the finish line. What do you view right now as the biggest obstacles in the state of Wisconsin toward getting to some of those points that you would like to see happen?
Well, the Republican majority has been focused on making government dysfunctional as opposed to giving folks the things that they deserve. Our minimum wage is still $7.25 an hour. We still not have legalized cannabis to bring revenue into our state. We are seeing hospital closures. We have an expanded Medicaid. So many things that make government not only a force of good, but give people the tools to be able to build the lives of dignity that they deserve. And so I'm so mad to build relationships, work across the aisle, and pass bipartisan legislation. I'm so proud that in 2023, Governor Evers signed legislation at 266, ensuring that our K-12 public schools are teaching Asian American history in the schools.
All right. I do want to get to the point I raised early on. You have been characterized as someone who aligns themselves with the Democratic Socialist of America. I guess it's a party. They have a platform piece out. People have picked and choosed which parts of that platform they want to address with you. I would just like you to talk about that in general. Is that where you see yourself kind of in alignment politically? And what are the parts of that platform that you might like to see applied in the state of Wisconsin?
I am a democratic socialist, which means that I put everyday, ordinary, working class people first, and I believe in them having the power and not the largest corporations and the oligarchs. I believe in democracy, fairness, and human rights. DSA isn't an organization. I do have local DSA chapter endorsements. However, I am less concerned about labels and expanding a brand and more concerned and will work harder than anyone else to make sure we deliver for working class people, and that we have a government that is actually working to put working class folks first.
All right. I know that at least from what I've been able to garner, and again, this is our first conversation, so I'm learning right along with the rest of the listeners here this morning. You would like to, at least it's been reported, you would like to see the state minimum wage, which you mentioned earlier, set at $20 an hour. Is that correct?
Yes. So eliminating a tipped minimum wage of $2.33, raising the wages with $15 an hour to a pathway to $20, but more importantly, allowing our local governments to have local control to set their own living wages, because for many in Wisconsin, $20 an hour is not a living wage. And for our smallest businesses, it's important that we allow there to be opportunities for them to buy into a health insurance program through a public option at the state, that we offer paid leave and free childcare. These are all things that can help lower costs while also having, while also making sure that we're increasing wages.
If you say to some local mom and pop business owners, of which we have many here in Janesville, you need to increase your payroll expenses by, let's just say that turns out to be 25% based on the fact that people are
paying $12 an hour entry level, somewhere like that in this area. What do you say when they say, how do you expect us to survive that? We can't be competitive if we've got to raise the wage that much.
99% of our businesses here in Wisconsin are small businesses, which is why it's important that the living wage bill that I support is one where there's a pathway to 20, where we make sure that we work a phase-in program for some of our smallest businesses to be able to work up to a living wage. Many of our small businesses are already paying $20 an hour or more. I think in order to help some of our smallest employers compete, is to make sure that there's an option for employees to be able to have, access to fair, high-quality childcare through a public option in the state where there's paid leave and that folks have access to free childcare. These are also economic policies that help lower costs, help our small businesses, and make sure that people are able to afford to live in the community that they work and play in.
The dynamics of getting people to a better place financially are certainly complicated and confusing. You mentioned childcare. I believe that you would like to see, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, you would like to see effectively free childcare available to everybody in the state that needs it. Is that correct?
Yes. So this would be for families that are fed 400% above the federal poverty level. So an average family of four making just under about $135,000 a year would be eligible for fully subsidized or free childcare. And we have to make sure that the state is actually putting separate, what we call segregated funds for childcare, because this is not only about making sure that the people taking care of our babies are taken care of, but it is infrastructure. It is economic policy. And right now, with the ending of the bridge payments, many of our providers are having to raise rates for families. And we are seeing childcare centers, this is potentially closing. So this is an emergency situation where we need to make sure we're working to make childcare affordable, fair, and that we're taking care of our workers are provided. The state has a responsibility to do that, and we can pay for it by eliminating a lot of these corporate subsidies by putting in a small payroll tax or having revolving or investing in this program through bringing in additional revenue, whether it's legalizing weed or making sure that, the tax exemptions that our data centers have right now totals up to $2 billion. That's investments that we can be putting back into communities, care, and our kids.
What about school funding, as long as we're kind of talking about dollars here, Francesca? What do you see as the future that is going to be needed from the state in order to adequately fund our public schools?
We can no longer pit property taxpayers against our kids and our schools. We have been defunding public schools for over a decade. It's imperative that we fully fund by putting 90% special education reimbursement, that we are building a new equitable school funding formula that doesn't pit communities against kids, and make sure that we're raising wages for our educators. If we do not have strong public schools, we can't have strong communities, and there is no strong democracy without strong public education. Our plan, we've introduced legislation that would increase a millionaire tax, a billionaire tax, and help lower and cut property taxes by up to 44%, but most importantly, do right by our kids and actually putting funding back into special education in our school.
A little particulars, if you could, just because I think it's important for people to understand. The taxes on higher earning individuals, and I'm assuming that applies to corporations as well. What kind of percentages are you talking about? What kind of dollars are we talking about that could come back into the state if those were implemented?
Well, right now, some of our lowest income earners are paying a higher tax rate than some of our highest income earners. Some of our smallest businesses are paying a higher corporate income tax rate than some of our largest corporations. And we remove and reform the Wisconsin Manufacturing Agricultural Tax Credit. That's almost $400 million a year that we can be putting into healthy school meals for all to ensure that all kids, regardless of what type of school they go to, have a free breakfast and lunch.
So you're talking about potentially up north of $400 million if you reorganize things in the way that you're proposing.
Well, that would just be for reforming the and eliminating the Wisconsin Manufacturing Agricultural Tax Credit, looking at increasing those who are earning the millions of dollars, so once you hit a million, bringing that tax bracket into 7% increase can help fund special education to lower costs to, and lower property taxes by 40%.
All right. Don't want to run out my time here. You've also got some pretty bold ideas as it relates to banking and grocery stores, potentially looking for a public bank and a public grocery store sort of institution, if I understand again from your the coverage so far. What do those look like? Who would control the policies, for instance, at the bank? How would these things work if they were actually in the public sector as opposed to the private sector?
North Dakota has had a public bank for over 100 years, and the public bank would be operated by the state of Wisconsin, but with financial experts and folks from the banking industry, not elected officials. And it would hold state taxes in the form of bank deposits. They would allow for lower interest long-term loans to help local governments, small business access to low interest long-term loans. Big businesses would also be able to buy and apply. And we can actually create a green bank to make sure that we're investing in renewable clean energy infrastructure, but also affordable housing, having predictable low interest financing for developers to be able to build sustainable, affordable housing. These green housing loans can be retrofitted in through a public bank infrastructure. And I think that the expansion of what is already existing at the Economic Development Corporation, that we want to make sure that it's a more equitable system. And a public bank actually in North Dakota, one of the benefits that came from it too is that in times of crisis, when we need to allocate resources efficiently and swiftly to folks, during COVID, a lot of those loans that were coming through, they were done much more efficiently in North Dakota because they have that public bank infrastructure.
Interesting. All right. Final question to you here before I kind of give you the floor for just a quick wrap up from yourself. But Governor Evers has thrown his support to one of your primary opponents. What does that say to you and other voters about who they should consider for their choice if they're going to vote on the Democratic side of the ticket here in August?
I want to make it crystal clear that this election belongs to the voters. Your elected officials work for you. The candidates should be working for you. And it is important that the candidates work to earn your votes and your trust. Governor Evers is free to endorse who he would like, but I think it's important that we continue to meet voters where they are, to talk about not only these plans, but how we are going to implement them, and that we are organizing working class people in every corner of our state to make sure that we win in August and November. I encourage folks to go to FrancescaHong.com. It would be an honor to earn your vote. Please make your plan to vote on or before August 11th.
All right, Representative Francesca Hong, gubernatorial candidate here that will be facing, as I do the count, currently four other names on the ballot come August 11th. We wish you much luck, and hopefully we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All right, pre-recorded earlier, and a little phone whatever with the quality there, so hopefully you were able to catch that all. I, Tom, am finding myself in a place where it's becoming more and more difficult to do these kinds of interviews and not offer people suggestions, trying to say this nicely. If you think that the idea of the public bank thing is good, for instance, I hope that we're not just going upon talking about stuff. I, after our conversation, went to North Dakota and searched COVID money fraud in North Dakota to see if the PPP loans, which are the loans she's referring to, that a lot of us, a lot of business owners here, you had to go to a bank that would service them. And we, if you did it, you remember it. You know how it worked. And the suggestion was, well, the funds got out faster because it was a public bank. Well, just like any of the other areas, it was not fraud-free. And there are documented examples. So whether or not that's a good idea, I don't know. What I find in the discussions with folks now is, like, everybody has these thoughts which sound good. And I can appreciate that. But I think it's got to be incumbent upon everybody that's going to cast a ballot to look beyond and find out what that means. I note that I did not get a solid answer, and so to those of you that noticed, on how much money she would look to raise by increasing taxes on millionaires and billionaires, and by how much. There was no answer there. There was the answer about a tax credit going to agriculture and manufacturing, and it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure out, well, if you go after that and you say, well, we're not going to issue that tax credit anymore, that increases the cost of farmers and manufacturers doing business in the state. And what does that mean? And everybody's going to come to their own opinion on that stuff. And I'm not trying to, really not trying to do anything more than say, look at this, all of this, the proposals that I continue to get from the other side of the aisle to fix Social Security, for example, at the national level. And I want to bang my head against a wall, because it doesn't take long to look at this and say, that's not going to work. But they're good talking points, and people have a habit of just digesting talking points. And I hope that everybody really looks. There's a very stark difference between some of the Democratic candidates in this race, by the way. And it's unfortunate that we probably won't get an interview with them all. But do some homework and see what you think, because it's important. There's all kinds of strategizing going on across media channels, and you'll see all this stuff about, voting in the other party's election to, whatever. There's people that would have things go a certain way so that their candidate could run against another candidate that they think has the chance to win or lose. It's become a game. And the best we can hope for is that we are voting with the knowledge that our candidate that we choose is someone of integrity, someone who will uphold American values and the state of Wisconsin values for that matter, and go from there. So that's
interesting. In Madison right now, I mean, if you want to be governor, are you willing to jump into a case like what happened with the shooting before you know all the facts and make a definitive statement about it? That's what she did.
And I that's why I say I'm finding it difficult here, and maybe at some point I'll.
So my
she did, and I can quote this, and you can say, and I guess you can separate it out from her campaign, or you can include it as part of what you know about Francesca Hong. She called it a sanctioned public execution. That's the quote.
That's what she said.
Okay, and she said it like the day after it happened, if not the day it happened. I can't recall which day. But so she's got a lot of ideas. She's very outspoken. She's very maybe that's what people want.
So
I don't know.
The neighborhood where this occurred is her district. My daughter lives in that area, and right now Willie Street and Baldwin are shut down. And it's just like what was happening up in the Twin Cities. They've got these barricades, and you can't get in and out. Makes it a little difficult to go to work. And there's a lot of complaints from people and businesses in the neighborhood. And one of the older people came out and said, well, we're with the cause. So screw you, basically.
Yeah. So, and I don't know. If you look, I mean, that's a subject for a whole nother show, which it will have to be because we're out of time. But, if you've been following the events of what's going on in Madison, I do scratch my head. I get that the police can't afford another PR nightmare by some other altercation that they're going to blow up in national media headlines. But by the same token, you're allowing people to hold the city of Madison hostage. They've canceled concerts on the square for two nights. They've closed businesses. They've canceled other events, all in the name of protecting these people's right to protest. Well, that goes way beyond the right to protest. And I'm kind of scratching my head, wondering why it's allowed to take the path it's taking. But as I said, another day. All right. Please join me at the fair. Well, we'll have some fun and not get so bogged down in all of this. 1 o'clock is Family Feud. And I don't think I have my list back up here anymore. But we got 1 o'clock, 1:30, and 2 o'clock, three separate sets of games. For you to come out and have some fun with, be at the coronation tonight, support the young ladies that will be vying for fairest of the fair. I'm honored to MC that again, and we'll hope you have some fun for the rest of your day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow right here on WCLO, Janesville, Beloit.